This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's episode 332. I'm not coming in tomorrow unless something really bad happens. Because I am writing tomorrow. I am writing like crazy at this point, trying to get to the end of this book. I think I know where I'm going. I've only got like 3 chapters left, and I'm really trying to make sure that it doesn't stretch to 4. I thought I had 3 chapters left, and then I wrote another chapter and realized I still had 3 chapters left, plus an epilogue. So I'm just getting in as much writing as I can, trying to get this thing locked down in the next week or two. I'd really like to have this finished by the latest, the 3rd week in August, but, well, maybe 2 weeks, I don't know. I'm just going to write as much as I can and try to get this thing locked down and end at some sort of an exciting, albeit probably not satisfying, conclusion, but at least maybe a little excitement. This has been an interest. I think they're all going to be interesting books, but it's been an interesting book. It hasn't necessarily ended up where I thought it was going to end up. I don't know why. I honestly do not know why I even try to figure out where these things might end up. Because they never end up there, except the first one, but that's because I was just working off of a sketch I had already done. So, yeah. It's not Star Trek. That is for certain. It is not Star Trek. I don't think anybody who actually reads the books would ever accuse me of this being Star Trek. So anyways, but it's fun. I think as of yesterday, I had already put down, I put down like 2,800 words on Sunday, put another 1,500, I think, down on Monday, another 800 on Tuesday, another 1,000 last night. So, yeah, I'm well on the way to my 7,500 words. And, there's an outside possibility if I just really pound it out that I'll get to 10,000 words this week. But I kind of need to if I'm going to get this book done. So, it's interesting, you know, I used to think, wow, 250 words an hour, I'm really going to have to work to get 250 words an hour, and, you know, you just keep pushing yourself a little bit, just do a little better, stay a little more focused, try a little harder. I mean, I don't know if it's any good, but at least the words are going down on the page, and, so it's interesting. I'll be interested to see once I loop back around and actually start doing a read-through. It's going a little long, so I can afford to cut stuff out. So we'll see. So that's going on, and that's good. It's been a really quiet week. It always is during what's called general counsel. My major client, they have a big gathering every 2 years, and it's always someplace, other than Springfield, Missouri. I think this one's in Orlando, Florida, I think. So it's, you know, tons of people are gone. And next week it will be almost as quiet because all the people that worked like crazy this week are going to be on vacation next week. And some will be on vacation for 2 weeks. Because they've been working so hard in the ramp up to general counsel. So that allows us to get some good work done, though. And I got some good work done this week, and everything seems to be pottering along. Clara is my granddaughter, is going to be starting kindergarten next Thursday. Just does not seem possible. So now we will see. We will see how this adventure goes. I remember, still remember putting my daughter in. Actually, we bounced her through kindergarten, but I still remember putting her on the bus for first grade. That was big transition. Big transition. But, you know, I'm sure everything will be fine. It's just there's a lot of things that can happen during these childhood years when kids are growing up. Just try to keep my ears and eyes open. Pay attention. Listen. Be Poppy. This is going to be fascinating. That's on my personal list of fascinating things that are going to happen over the next 20 years. You know, my grandkids growing up. That's going to be fascinating to watch. My daughter and son-in-law working at our church next 20 years. That's going to be fascinating. My son-in-law preached. I don't normally talk about him preaching. He's a good preacher, good content, but man, he preached a good sermon on Sunday. He's doing a series called Ashes and talking about exhausted potential and the things that, you know, weigh us down in our life. And the first one was shame. And he really did a good job with that. And I guess the response was very good in the 10:30 service. The 8:30 service, everything's a little bit tight, so you don't really have much time for people to come forward to the altar and have a response time. But I guess they said this service, the 10:30 service, actually ran over by 40 minutes or so because people had responded. And so it's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's fun to see, you know, fun to see them honing their skills and moving forward. And it's good. On the topic of things that are going to come forth, significantly change, impact us, any condition you wish to enumerate in the next 20 years, I don't think there's any question that religious fundamentalism in all its shapes and forms is going to have a profound effect on the next 20 years. It's interesting because what has been branded as religious fundamentalism, Al-Qaeda, Islamic terrorists, when you look at their behavior, you don't come away necessarily with the idea that the people who are committing those acts are, in fact, deeply religious. There's stories told of the terrorists before them. They blow themselves up doing things, going to bars, going to strip clubs, those types of things that are very much not on the list of acceptable ideas for an adherent to Islam. And yet they do them anyways. And we've had this general notion that while the terrorists, while those who proclaim a religious fanaticism for Islam might talk a good game, when it comes right down to what they truly believe and how they truly act, they are in fact children of the modern world. There is an organization, however, that that might not be able to be said for, and that is ISIS. There was an article. The article is several months old. It was from March. I think my son-in-law, Alan, actually forwarded it on to me, and he said, "This is pretty interesting." Excuse me. It's been a long week. I've been programming like crazy this week. Trying to make a while the sun shines. Alan had sent me this article several weeks ago. And I had bookmarked it and gone on, and I came across it, and he had kind of given me the gist of it. I will tell you right now that it's impossible to go over the entire article. I copied it and dropped it into my normal format for notes, and even before I had gone through and done my highlighting, which my highlighting consists of taking certain phrases in the article and turning them into 20-point bold so that I can spot them very easily as I'm driving. But even before I had done any of that, the article in Word was 47 pages. And I thought, okay, we're going to have to cut this down. So this certainly is not an exhaustive review of the article that was in The Atlantic. And The Atlantic, they're famous for big articles. But that's where Spritz comes in. Spritz is a little thing that I'm hoping they keep going, because I really like Spritz. Spritz is one of those little speed reading things that puts the word right in the center of the screen and, you know, tries to get it centered on a given letter, and so you just stare at this line on the screen, and that letter is red, and you stare at the red letter and just sort of relax, and then they just start flying these letters past you. And I finally found a spot that would allow me to take any web article and mark it, and then run over to, oh, I forget what it's called, booksomething.com. You mark it on book, not bundles. I don't know. Anyways, and you go over there and click on the little speed reading button, and I crank it up as fast as it'll go, 600 words a minute, and then just stare at the red letters. And mostly I can get most of the gist at 600 words a minute, which means I can get through the article a whole lot faster than if I was trying to read it in its normal form. So I had done that, got through it all, and I thought, oh, okay, well, there's some interesting stuff in there. My son-in-law had given me the gist of it. And it had kind of surprised him. I will admit, it doesn't surprise me much, the things in this article, but I think just as a way of putting down a stake in the ground and saying, on this 8th day of August, I think it's August the 8th, on this 8th day of August 2015, on this Thursday afternoon, this is something that I think is going to be fascinating to watch over the next 20 years. I don't know if ISIS as an organization will survive. I doubt that they will, but I would guess that their legacy and what they are trying to accomplish will be picked up by others. So this article in the Atlantic, the title was "What ISIS Really Wants." It's by Graham Wood. And he was he did a big investigative piece on the motivations behind the Islamic State and what they are truly trying to accomplish. He opens the article by talking about this group that seized Mosul, Iraq last June and is already ruling an area larger than the United Kingdom. And he makes the claim in there that our ignorance of them is in some way understandable. It is what he calls a hermit kingdom. Few have gone there and returned. And the writer of this article feels like we've misunderstood the Islamic State in at least two ways. He said, first, we tend to see jihadism as monolithic. That, oh, well, whatever the motivation of Al-Qaeda was, that must be the motivation of the Islamic State as well. They're just trying to bring the United States to its knees. You know, they're waging the war of a thousand cuts, and yet that doesn't really fit with the actions of the Islamic State. And the second way the writer of this article felt like we had been misled, was by a well-intentioned and dishonest campaign to deny the Islamic State's medieval religious nature. And this is what I was just talking about, that we tend to think, oh, well, these fundamentalists, you know, they like their popcorn and want to watch their movies and yada, yada, yada. And they like their pizza and they, you know, all that stuff. But what really motivates this group, according to this article, is that they really do want to see a return to what they consider legitimate, which is returning to a civilization that has a 7th century legal environment. And they truly believe that the way they are going to bring this about is, in fact, to hasten the apocalypse. So, they are making every effort to bring about what they consider their prophetic scriptures. They have attached great importance to the Syrian city of Dabiq near Aleppo. And when they conquered this city, there was tremendous celebration. Because according to their interpretation of the Islamic scriptures, it is there that the prophet said that the armies of Rome will set up their camp and the armies of Islam will meet them, and Dabiq will be Rome's Waterloo or its Antietam. You know, one of the leaders, one supporter of the Islamic State, recently tweeted, according to this article, that Dabiq is basically all farmland. You can imagine large battles taking place here. The article says that the Islamic State propagandists drool with anticipation of this event and constantly imply that it will come soon. The state's magazine quotes Zarqawi as saying, "The spark has been lit in Iraq and its heat will continue to intensify until it burns the crusader armies in Dabiq." Recent propaganda video shows clips from Hollywood war movies set in medieval times, perhaps because many of the prophecies specify that the armies will be on horseback or carrying weapons. So, apparently, what the Islamic State is trying to do is to stir up enough trouble. Stir up enough trouble to get the United States and their allies over there because they truly believe that if the United States and their allies go over there to try to shut down the Islamic State, that the Arab world will rise up and defeat the Americans, whom they interpret as Rome. This article goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. So I'm going to skip over a bunch of stuff because last week I went really long. That the United States will go over there with its allies and they will be soundly defeated, and that is what will usher in the new caliphate, I think they call it, the new one world Islamic government, whose foundation will be built on the law as specified by the Prophet, by as Sharia law, I think it's called. And this is very interesting to me. This is fascinating to me because this whole environment has echoes of things. This ability that leaders have to inspire people to sacrifice everything is a really interesting idea. I mean, you do have shades of it in Christianity, obviously, but there's also shades in all kinds of other religious and political systems. If you watch any of the specials on North Korea, what you see there is a people who are convinced that their leader is some kind of deity. And he does all these wonderful things for them, and it's great. And these are people who have no food, no money. They live in just terrible conditions. And you have the same thing going on. I mean, in Nazi Germany, there's some interesting quotes at the end of this article. I'm just going to skip over a lot of this stuff. If you want to read the article in The Atlantic, it's a long read, but it is very interesting. It's called What Does ISIS Want? You can search for it. At the end of this article, he quotes for some people. And he talks about spending time with people from ISIS and how passionate they were and intellectual they were and how certain they were of all this kind of stuff. And he said, I enjoy their company as a guilty intellectual exercise up to a point. And then he refers to George Orwell saying, in reviewing Mein Kampf in March 1940, George Orwell confessed that he had never been able to dislike Hitler. Something about the man projected an underdog quality even when his goals were cowardly or loathsome. If he were killing a mouse, he would know how to make it seem like a dragon. And according to the writer of this article, the Islamic State's partisans have much the same allure. They believe they are personally involved in struggles beyond their own lives, that merely to be swept up in the drama on the side of the righteous is a privilege and a pleasure, especially when it is also a burden. Fascism, Orwell continued, is psychologically far sounder than any hedonistic concept of life. Whereas socialism, even capitalism in a more begrudging way, have said to people, I'll offer you a good time. Hitler has said to them, I offer you struggle, danger, and death. And as a result, a whole nation flings itself at his feet. That is so interesting. Orwell said, we ought not to underrate its emotional appeal. And the writer of the article goes on to conclude, nor in the case of the Islamic State, its religious or intellectual appeal, that the Islamic State holds the imminent fulfillment of prophecy as a matter of dogma, at least tells us the mettle of our opponent. It is ready to cheer its own near obliteration and to remain confident, even when surrounded, that it will receive divine succor if it stays true to the prophetic model. Ideological tools may convince some potential converts that the group's message is false, and military tools can limit its horrors. But for an organization as impervious to persuasion as the Islamic State, few measures short of these will matter, and the war may be a long one, even if it doesn't last until the end of time. This is going to be fascinating to watch. This is going to be fascinating to watch, because once you get people to make that transition between worrying about their comfort and their convenience and their control, and once you get them to put their faith and trust in something larger than themselves and hurl themselves into the battle. I was watching a two-hour overview of World War II this week as well. And the Japanese, they have this kind of fanaticism where they believe their emperor is God and he cannot be defeated and they will not be defeated. And I think it was on Iwo Jima, they were talking about that the soldiers just had never seen anything like it, because when the American soldiers got there and they started winning, civilians, there was no way they were going to surrender to the Americans. They just started running off the cliffs, and it was this huge mass suicide, women taking their children with them. This type of fervor is fascinating. It's just fascinating. So it's going to be really interesting to see where this goes over the next 20 years. And, you know, there may be some that think that ISIS will be long gone before then, but I'm not sure. We'll just have to wait and see. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.